This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In 2016, San Antonio's effort to do something about transportation was pretty much stuck in a ditch. Lone Star Rail cratered, and the city council couldn't even decide whether to give $10 million for extra funding for VIA. Meanwhile, the population is growing at an incredible rate, and driving from point A to point B in this town is getting more and more difficult. What's being done with this problem that's only going to get worse? This week, Texas Public Radio is airing a series of reports called Stuck Behind the Wheel. Our reporters are looking at rapid bus service, light rail, and toll roads, which are all in the future plans for San Antonio. And what do you want to see happen? We're joined by District 6 City Councilmember Ray Lopez. He's the chair of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization's Transportation Policy Board. Also with us in the studio is Jeffrey Arndt, the CEO and president of VIA Metropolitan Transit. And also with us here is Shelley Koffler, Texas Public Radio's news director, and she crafted the recent report about the need for rail in San Antonio and how it's happening in other cities. And welcome to The Source. It's great to have you all here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Councilman Lopez, since as part of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, can you kind of talk about what is in the works for San Antonio's transportation needs?
Sure, I'd be glad to. And thanks for the opportunity to come and kind of share some of our views on this incredible topic that we've been wrestling with here for, I would say, the last decade, trying to figure out, you know, the direction. And I think one of the things that's happening at the regional level, certainly from the MPO's perspective, is to kind of define what we consider the region and what are the regional concerns. It's easy to say that the regional outlook has to be a little bit more than San Antonio. So how much is it? Is it a handful of counties around us, or does it really create a view of a corridor similar to the I-35 corridor that takes us not only to Austin and on to Dallas, but down to Laredo and on into Mexico and Monterey and beyond.
For some people, the region is just get from downtown to home, you know, and before dinner time. You know, that's what they're thinking about.
That's right. But that trip, that last leg, that last mile, as they say, is all part of that continuum that we have to decide on. What is the regional perspective that we're going to do? Because how you get there, the second that you walk out of your home, when you walk out the front steps, you have to decide on the mode of transportation. If you get in your car, the rest of that trip is going to be dictated by how much your car is going to have to, how much time your car is going to have to spend on the road. If you walk out of there and walk to a train station to get to where you're going, that's a completely different perspective. And I believe that as we start to define what our region is going to be, and then we start to define the, I think, direction that we have to be, which is moving people, not cars, we have to kind of instill into folks, hey, listen, you can walk out of your house, go catch some mass transit to your initial destination, and finally get to your total destination, which could include going to Austin or going to Laredo or going to Mexico City. That's a 25-year, that's a quarter decade, a quarter century plan going forward, and we've got to be able to, crystallize around what our vision is going to be around that.
Okay, our phone lines are open. We want to hear from the community about their thoughts about the future of transportation in San Antonio, where you want to see the dollars put. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. We got a caller already, and this is Tony. And Tony, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, it's good to talk to you. In 1968, when Hemisphere opened, we had a monorail. And the only thing, they kind of got in a hurry, and the monorail, something happened to it. And we had the Breckenridge train, and we had Skyride. And I was kind of wondering, instead of just for amusement, why couldn't we have a suspended, instead of digging holes in the street and everything, and make a new track? And my concern also is the weekend and the night schedule and the holiday schedule for the bus. You know, they on the weekends and nights and holidays, the buses don't run that often. They don't run that late. And if you have, if your source of transportation is the bus, well, you know, you got to play Cinderella, only instead of 12 o'clock midnight, you might have till 10:30, 11 o'clock or...
All right.
And the crosstown bus is the 505 and the 509. It would be nice if you could cross over instead of having to ride all the way downtown and all the way back up again.
Okay, Tony, thank you for the question. And I remember the monorail very well. But Jeffrey Arndt, CEO, president of VIA Metropolitan Transit, that weekend and late schedule.
And let me talk to you about bus frequency, and that's really the first leg of what VIA is doing right now. Is we recognize that the level of service we have on the road in many corridors is not the kind of service that would be wildly attractive, let's say, to a person who might have access to a vehicle or other modes of transportation. That was really the genesis of the discussion of the $10 million transfer deal with the city, an effort to increase frequency, because we know the number one driver of people, the number one thing that needs to be there for people to find public transportation attractive is frequency.
So you're saying that people take the bus generally because they don't really have other options?
Much of our ridership today are people that do not have vehicles available for that trip. And part of that is driven by the fact that the level of service we're able to operate under our current funding and to serve the size area we have results in a frequency of service that is not attractive if you have other options in many corridors. Now, Primo was one of the first corridors where we said, let's try to do something really different, something that could be attractive, something that would be something greater than the fixed route system that we were already operating. So we have high frequency every 10 minutes throughout most of the day. We have a long span throughout the day. We have less frequent stops, which speeds up the trip. We have buses that speak to the traffic signals that further speed up the trip. We have special stations that make it comfortable. We have information in those stations. And Primo has really outperformed our system 5 to 7% as kind of proof that if you have that kind of service on the street, that people are going to find transit a more attractive option and give consideration to it.
And so Shelley Koffler, News Director TPR, you've been reporting on this issue, and what are you finding?
Well, let me just step back a second, Dave, and tell you why we're doing this series on Morning Edition and ATC. The numbers are really staggering, and here's just one that really hit me. A 50-minute drive today in 2040 is going to take 91 minutes. 3.9% of our roads today are busy all the time, congested all the time, and that's going to grow to almost 40% in 2040. So I sort of see San Antonio, and you know, I moved here 2 years ago from Dallas. San Antonio being where Dallas was 15, 20 years ago, maybe where Austin was 15 years ago. Jeffrey worked in Houston with the mass transit system there, where Houston was 15, 20 years ago. And there are some things we don't talk about here very often that are already in practice in other cities. So the goal with this series was to examine bus rapid transit in Houston. Can we do it here? Can we afford it here? Would it be good here? Rail system in Dallas, which is wildly popular now, 92 miles, the largest system in the country. Should we do it? Can we do it? What are the barriers if we want to do it? And so that's the point of the series. And I hope we're going to start a conversation that gets people talking about things that maybe they thought were dead and not to be talked about. Toll roads haven't been popular. People are talking about it. They're in the VIA plans. It's in the city plans.
And there's a rail plan also.
And the rail plan is in the 2040 SA Tomorrow plan.
So we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. Our phone lines are open. We want to hear from our listeners. The number is 210-614-8980. We're talking about the future of San Antonio transportation. The people are coming whether we like it or not, and the roads are going to get much more crowded, and we've got to figure out how we're going to move people around. What innovations are out there? What's happening? What planning is being done? Where's the money going to come from? 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio is home to 8 of the state's top 100 congested roadways, and that's expected to go up in next years, with more than 1 million people coming to the city in the next 25 years. Other major cities in the state have multimodal solutions already in place, like rail. San Antonio, that's just a dream. According to the Texas Transportation Institute, 93% of Texans use a personal vehicle as their primary means of transportation, and that is up from 91% in 2014. And how much time Texans are spending in their personal vehicle is also way up. It grew 29% from 2013 to 2015. So people are spending more time in their cars, not less. We want to hear what you think about that as we talk about the future of San Antonio's transportation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And we've got a caller with Daniel. And Daniel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there. I want to make an opinion that we're never going to get trains. And I'm the biggest supporter of rail transportation here. The thing is, if we're really serious about providing public transportation, like on the commuter train, we would start investing in buses right now, because the only way we're going to get that commuter train running if we force Union Pacific from the federal level to provide the tracks.
Okay. All right, Daniel, thank you for the call. So I think he's alluding to some of the issues that we had with Lone Star Rail, which actually, you know, kind of fell off the track this past year. And now we're trying to figure out a new solution, looking at Campo, Austin's MPO and San Antonio's MPO, and figuring out what's the future. Any indication of what that might look like as District 6 City Council Member Ray Lopez?
Sure. I mean, that's a topic of discussion virtually at every meeting. And virtually the drive for every side meeting that we have, especially when it deals with, you know, regional or corridor transportation discussions. The mayor has reached out, representing the city's opinion, to Mayor Adler in Austin to find out how we can create some sort of a coalition and a comprehensive view of what we're going to do. But at the end of the day, it means how much money are we willing to put into the initial, you know, phases of the study. The fact that the UP option, the Union Pacific option, got taken off the table last year, really simply said we had a partner that had a rail system available to them to run freight on, and they were willing to work with us to put passenger rail on that freight line. They bailed out for a lot of reasons, and all of them were certainly, you know, justifiable from their perspective on how they do business. But they're not the only ones that are in a position to support us. We've started the negotiations and the discussion with Amtrak. What most people don't realize is that Amtrak, which is a passenger rail system, while not with
but
the
they're also using the UP rail.
They are using the UP rail, and the point that I was going to make is that passenger rail takes priority from a governmental perspective on access to those rails over freight. So the better partner, I believe, instead of UP, is really Amtrak. Amtrak has priority of moving passengers over rail. Now, it's going to be an issue of sharing the track that's there today. So what will have to happen is defining the improvement of that track, what's the capital investment that's required to get it to, as Jeff has said several times, to get the user experience up enough that people will get between San Antonio and Austin and hop on to some sort of a commuter rail. We're working towards those kinds of solutions. I know that Mayor Adler and Mayor Taylor are both willing to commit dollars to the initial study to work with Amtrak to find out what is that ultimate cost, and then where do we look for the capital dollars to be able to support that.
Okay.
But at the end of the day, that's a decade or two away before we're able to implement all that.
So before we went to break, we had that other caller talking about the monorail and about whether or not an elevated line system makes sense, and that just drives up the cost exponentially. And is that true, Jeffrey? Aren't?
Yeah, I mean, monorails, because they're up in the air, and when you think about access to those and the stations, the elevated stations, that's why they're not widely used throughout the United States.
I think the Simpsons pretty much killed monorail for everybody. No one can talk about monorail with a straight face. Okay, another caller with Jen. And hi, Jen. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, David. Thanks. So when we're talking about using public transportation within the city, I'm a huge fan of high-speed rail between cities, and I would use it often. The difference that I see is that as a rule, when I need to go somewhere quickly within the city and I don't want to drive, I look for convenience. And versus trying to find which bus to use and when to get on it and where to find it, I just call an Uber. It's two buttons. It's a lot easier to me, and I don't mind if it's $2 or $3 more. So I think that especially if we're going to invest in public transportation within the city, then we need to make the investment now to make that a system that younger people want to use as they continue to age. Otherwise, it could end up falling flat as an investment, really not hitting with that generation who should be using it coming up.
All right, Jen, thank you for that question. Great comments. And so Jeffrey Arndt from VIA.
Yes, we're in discussions with Uber and Lyft, frankly, on ways in which we can integrate our services. So that's a very valid point that one might take a route like Primo to the medical center transit center and then call Uber for the last leg of their trip. Or there might be areas in which bus service that runs once an hour could be replaced at the same cost by us contracting with that kind of company to operate within that area. So, you know, we recognize, and in fact, the third leg of our plan, of our 2040 plan, is the use of technology in advancing transportation. Our transit center, you know, the Central Plaza was specifically designed so that taxis, Uber, high-speed rail, Lone Star Rail, they could all come together there. Ultimately, you have to remember, many of the people that use our system, that $1 or $2 may make a big difference. So we're having to balance the market.
So does the VIA then supplement the Uber ride?
Or the Uber ride supplements the VIA, depending on the circumstances, absolutely.
Now, Uber and Lyft are on the forefront of automated vehicles, self-driving cars, integrating them into their fleet, and they see that as their future. Would that be how public transportation and self-driving cars could integrate?
Yes, absolutely. Again, that example, at the medical center, you could come into there on Primo and get into one of those vehicles that you've prearranged for, and it would take you to your final destination.
You know, there's some interesting information that Texas A&M Transit, the Transportation Institute has, and they're talking about like 2030 before this happened, but if you had automated vehicles, you could program them so you could stack them so closely together on a roadway, you could get more people in clean-burning vehicles on the roadways.
Yeah, the connected vehicles. That's an automated connected vehicle, which is the next level up.
And they just announced that they're going to be using the Fredericksburg Corridor as a proving ground for automated vehicles here in San Antonio, one of the few places that's happening in the state.
Yeah, that's been a proposal to the state.
Another caller with Antonio. Antonio, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
Our concerns have been, again, this is not the first time about the rail system. We voted it down here in San Antonio already three times. And we do understand, as opponents of this, that we are continuing to grow and rapidly. But we can call for controlled growth instead of just saying, hey, it's a gold rush and everybody just move in and do a siege on all the infrastructure of transportation in San Antonio. So we've called it down because we don't believe it will alleviate any of the traffic. We believe it will make it worse by taking up a lane or two, and so then therefore constricting vehicular traffic, which in San Antonio, particularly the streets were created to support vehicular traffic. Even VIA knows this, but now the monies, I guess, those federal monies coming in for mass transportation has been very, very attractive to VIA, and they're forgetting how they began, which is by the public's demand. And so VIA should support continuing to keep the streets expanding more avenues for vehicular traffic instead of constricting it by putting a rail and perhaps even taking land rights away from people, because either it's going to take up a lane or he's going to have to take up private property.
So you said that San Antonio voted rail down three times. I can only remember one in 2000.
Oh, yes, it's three. It's three times already.
And the other ones were?
Here's the time that I'm aware of. In 2000, they voted it down, and then 2013, 2014, streetcar was tabled by the city.
No, but that wasn't a public vote.
That was not a vote.
That was a vote to require a vote.
They're silence the people's vote. They don't want to give us a right to vote on it again because we will vote it down.
All right. And to your point, you're saying that since the streets were created to service vehicles, but many of the streets were created to service horse-drawn carriages here in San Antonio and horses, and we moved on from there.
But they were very constricted. They were very constricted at that point. They were not as expanded. They expanded them because of the vehicular traffic.
All right, then. Okay. So his point is that there is still some public animus against, you know, rail there.
So that's really the history of rail. I mean, when we look at Dallas or Houston, Houston had a vote that failed as well. And then in 2004, January 1st, opened rail. 2003 had a positive vote. But probably the most interesting information was information that the city's SA Tomorrow planning effort, a public survey where they said, if you had $100 to spend, what would you spend it on? And people allocated those dollars across various modes, $32 on roads, but $30 on light rail specifically. So clearly there are people that are interested in light rail as well.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jeff. And certainly the SA Tomorrow, engagement with the community highlighted a lot of things. And one of the things that it highlighted most importantly was that the overwhelming sentiment is that we have multipurpose lanes, not specific use lanes, which means mass transit, HOV lanes, and things of that nature. We've got to get into a mindset that says we're moving people, not cars.
Why has it been such a terrible job of promoting this rail service in San Antonio? I mean, it seems like you've not been able to get a message out that appeals to most people.
Everything is an opinion, right? And this is mine.
Well, opinions are shaped, you know.
That's right.
Through public awareness campaigns.
And part of the issue becomes that many elected officials are not willing to share their opinion because it has negative implications to them politically. What we need to do is get out of the political realm as it deals with transportation and get into the governance realm. The governance realm says, if we don't do these things, what are the consequences that we're going to experience 25 years down the road? And if you don't want to talk about environmental issues, if you don't want to talk about clean air, then you're missing the boat on having a comprehensive discussion about all this.
Yeah, clean air is another factor in this, but people talk about, there are private interests who are very interested in getting light rail going on in San Antonio, but no one mentions that there are private interests and very car dealers and stuff like that who are very motivated in keeping light rail from becoming a reality in San Antonio.
I would just say, from the point of doing the story that we aired this morning that will air again on Texas Public Radio is to take a look across many cities, what happens when they try to get into rail. Houston, Dallas, Austin. They fought the battles. People turned it down. They said no. Dallas is exceptional in that when they finally put rail cars on the track and people had the opportunity to ride them, you'll hear Jeffrey Arndt talk about a rail bias. There are people who will ride rail who won't take a bus because they think it's safer. It gets them directly to where they want to go. It is a more expensive system. And maybe it's not for San Antonio. That's not for me to say. But the point I was trying to make in the story, and I think that we want to open the discussion for in our community, is if you look at other communities and other cities, what has their success and maybe some of their challenges been when they've said, okay, let's try this mode of operation?
So right now, there's a San Antonio Tomorrow plan. I understand it's going to be a rail-ish system, San Antonio, San Pedro Avenue from downtown to the airport, something maybe along New Braunfels. From the Pearl going to Brooks City Base, Fredericksburg Road to the Medical Center.
There's East-West Corridor, which is Commerce, East Houston.
So they're trying to map out a comprehensive plan, not just one little thing for downtown.
Correct.
And you think by talking about a larger system that will move people from all across the city easily, and it definitely help the working man who may not be able to, that's the way this should be promoted?
Well, absolutely. You need to put everything within the context of the system, and you're not going to build the system all at once. So when you come forward with whatever your starter system is, whether it's light rail or bus rapid transit, it's going to be in a specific corridor. But people have to understand what the whole system would look like to have an understanding of what they will be getting.
Okay, and you still have to get over that hurdle of people just, it's a toxic word to talk about rail in some quarters of San Antonio. People really react to that, and we got to figure out, how we can have a healthy conversation about what's best for the future of the city's transportation. Jeffrey Arndt, I want to thank you. We got to let you go. As president and CEO of Via Metropolitan Transit, the District 6 City Council Member Ray Lopez is going to stick around for the second half of The Source. Also with us still is Shelley Koffler. She's going to be sticking around talking about what she's found out and what we've been working on this growing issue. We'll be right back. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about transportation in San Antonio, and we are looking at a future nightmare of gridlock unless some big decisions are made soon to what to do about it as the city grows. Now, keep in mind that mobility not just benefits individual drivers like you and me as we want to get home or get to work soon and quickly, but also the Texas economy as goods and services move safely and freely across our state and across our city. The state's the city's economy is dependent on being able to move people and things and freight around safely and efficiently and dependability. So we want to invite you into our conversation as we talk about this issue. The number is 210-614-8980. With us again for the second half hour, Ray Lopez, a city councilman from District 6, chair of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization's Metropolitan Policy Board. Also joining us now is Linda Alvarado Vela. She's a planning and Public Involvement Manager for the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Shelley Koffler, the Texas Public Radio News Director, and Aaron Schrank joins us. He's a TPR reporter, and he's been covering the toll road issue. Welcome all of you to, again, to the second half of our conversation. So, Linda, talk about how you are seeing things at the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and what is the big puzzle here?
You know, I think for us, it's looking at the fact that we are getting a million more people, and that we're looking at congestion not just in one corridor, but pretty much all over the map in our region. And so then it really becomes about, changes the conversation a bit. It's about looking for a way to have reliable means of getting from one side of town to the other. And it's about, you know, where is congestion acceptable? Because we're not going to be able to get rid of congestion. So where do we really need to make sure that our corridors are moving and moving well? For example, I'll give you a great one. You know, if I have a heart attack, I want to make sure I can get to the medical center. And that's a pretty important area of town that we need to make sure stays uncongested.
That's why they built that underpass under Fredericksburg Road at Medical.
Exactly. And so we want to have those conversations about, okay, so this is our future. This is what's coming. Where do we want to have reliable means of transportation? And what does that mean? And where might congestion be okay? And where is it really completely unacceptable?
So you're doing a lot of data analysis.
We are doing a lot of data analysis right now. We're actually working with HEAR data, which uses Bluetooth data and allows us to get a better sense of actual real-time speeds on a variety of corridors throughout the community and start to look at this issue in a different way than we've ever been able to before. You hear a lot of talk about big data, and that's what we're getting into right now. And of course, that's taking some time because it is quite a bit of data.
But you're taking the guesswork out of how people use our transportation system.
Absolutely. And we're putting it into a platform that is web-based and that we're going to make open and transparent for anyone to be able to look at a particular corridor, click on it, and see how it's operating at a particular time of day, a particular day of the week, or a month of the year.
So we can see how things are working presently, but what about the future? Are you running simulations?
Yes, we do. A lot of the work that the MPO does is actually forecasting not only population and employment demographics, but also what we think that will translate into our system, our transportation system. We use a travel demand model to do that work, and it's actually updated every 5 years. So the last time it was done and adopted was, I believe, back in, and this is where you might need to save me, Councilman Lopez, I believe was in 2014, December of 2014 is when the last plan was adopted. So we'll be getting started doing the update to that plan here fairly soon. It's an ongoing process.
Sure. Okay, let's get on to our phone lines because we got a lot of callers here. A lot of people want to voice their opinion. Darby is on the line. Darby, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you. You know, I just wanted, a lot of people don't think they can never get out of their pickup, but I think there's a lot of advantages of taking mass transit. There's reduced cost, reduced emissions, no insurance cost, no accidents, no injuries. You can use your time productively. You can get some exercise when you get to the or to get to and from the bus stop or whatever. So, you know, I take the bus whenever I can. I think that it's underappreciated.
Right, and you get to see the city and mix with other people. It's an experience.
Exactly. Yeah, that's another aspect.
And so, Darby is choosing to use the metro system to get around the VIA system. Not everybody has that luxury. You know, everybody's got to get to work on time. A lot of pressure. Stop at HEB to get something to bring home to feed the kids. You know, it's tough. You know, so how do we get more people out there to see what Darby's talking about, Councilman?
Well, I think in today's environment, we can, you know, use the technology that's available to us today. I mean, there are some apps out there that'll kind of tell you, this I'm trying to get from point A to point B, and here's probably an option that I could take. I think where the anxiety from the daily commuter, the daily traveler goes is, But what if I have not a point A to point B, but I have a point A subset, right? I got to stop off at the grocery store on my way from work to home or the
other way. Or I suddenly have to pick up my kid from school.
How do I make a modification to that? And is there an alternative? As I walk out the door, my God, I got downtown in a bus, and now I need to get over to the medical center to go take care of some issue there, change my plan, and I didn't bring my car. Is there a method of transportation that will get us there on these unpredictable, you know, routes? And that's where what Linda was talking about with the travel demand models. We know where people live, work, and play, generally speaking. And what we try to do is identify where they're going to and from, and perhaps where the alternative, if you will, unscheduled stops may be. And many of them are. I work on the deep west side of town. I go downtown every day, but I need to stop off on the way home at 4 o'clock at my elementary school where my kid's going to school, so I can go to a BTA meeting. But I can't do it because if I get off that bus, I'm going to wait for an hour or two waiting for another bus to come around. So it's the being able to manage your life with some level of certainty. Apps in the future will make that available to a lot of folks, and I think that's probably the approach we'll have to adopt.
So as we talk a lot about mass transit, another form of mass transit is highways. That's actually where most of the masses are. They're on the highways. Mm-hmm. And the highways, which we usually call freeways, are not going to be freeways for some because we're talking seriously about toll roads for the future. And Aaron Schrenk, I know that you are working on a story about tolling coming to San Antonio.
Yeah, well, we just wanted to provide kind of a broad outlook in the report looking at the potential future of tolls in the San Antonio area. We've had the distinction we're the largest metro area in Texas without any toll roads within the city limits right now, also without any HOV or carpool lanes, but there are, as Linda could probably tell you, there are several projects in the works right now or in the MPO's plans that include tolling, including a large stretch of 1604 and parts of I-35. Our report just kind of lays out what's likely to happen and why tolling is being considered, helping people to understand how highway funding works a little bit better, to understand why transportation planners say tolling needs to be on the table.
So I know that we had Texas voters approved Prop 1 in 2014 and Proposition 7 in 2015. And that increased highway funding across the state for TxDOT and created this Texas Clear Lanes funding, which created money so that we didn't have to do some tolling here locally. But that's not enough. So there's still going to be more tolling that has to be done. Linda?
Well, one of the things that we look at, we're actually calling them managed lanes now, and it's managed lanes for a reason because it doesn't necessarily have to be the toll. It can be the HOV, which is high occupancy vehicle. It could be a truck-only lane. If you look at 35, anytime there's an accident, you can see an entire lane full of trucks backed up as far as the eye can see.
A lot of the accidents on 35 were caused by the big trucks.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that, but, you know,
that's a reality.
That is something. But when we talk about managing the lane, it really is trying to make sure, get back to the issue of reliability. If there is an incident, is there a lane that is uncongested enough to allow for someone to move through that congestion and get from one point to another? Is there a lane that if you're running late to an appointment,
does that mean that public transportation is now going to be going to the people who can afford a toll?
No, that's not necessarily what it means. It means that we're giving people an option that is free from congestion. And in the future,
if you're willing to pay for it,
or if perhaps you're in a carpool with two or more people or three or more people or whatever that lane gets defined as. But right now, the alternative is to be stuck in congestion. And you asked earlier on the show, why haven't we been successful in promoting some of these alternative modes? And I think what it gets back down to is that we just haven't been congested enough. You know, I was coming back from a conference in Chicago and I was trying to get a taxi cab to take me to the airport, and I had two cab drivers slam the door on me. And I finally asked them, when I say, why won't they take me to the airport? And they said, because it's rush hour. And if they try to go to the airport right now, it's going to be an hour and a half there and an hour and a half for them to try and get back. And so my only
option. And it's a flat rate to the airport.
And my only option was to get on the train, to get on the L train to the airport. It was 30 minutes. I got there and no problem. And why? Because that is a reliable form of transportation to get from downtown to the airport because it's in a dedicated right-of-way. The taxi cab would have had to go in with mixed traffic, and so it would have taken them a lot longer to get me there. So when we talk about reliability, it's when all of these lanes are congested, do you have a way to get through, cut through that congestion, either in a managed lane or on light rail?
Okay, we're going to continue the conversation. We'll get some more comments about what could be happening locally with tolling. I want to hear some callers on this issue as well. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're talking about our special series of reports called Stuck Behind the Wheel. You can, if you didn't hear them, you can find them on our website at tpr.org, and we'll be right back. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Chances are you're listening in your car, so you know all about traffic, and that's what we're talking about this afternoon. Traffic and congestion and the future of transportation in San Antonio. Tolling is on the table for some areas, particularly in consideration of all the growth that we have coming to this city. And what do you think about that? We want to hear from you. The number is 210-614-8980. And Shelley Koffler, Texas Public Radio News Director, you wanted to jump in on that.
Well, I was just going to say, when we ended our conversation before the break, Linda was talking about HOV lanes, high occupancy vehicle lanes, where you can't travel in them unless you pay extra, or maybe there are two or three people in your car. But the other thing, and this is something if Jeffrey Arndt were still here from VIA would talk about, and that is we can never really have bus rapid transit in this city unless we have a dedicated lane so the bus just travels right down that lane and is not in the midst of other traffic. That's what would make bus rapid transit here faster, more frequent, just as it is in Houston, if you had that lane. Not advocating for it, just wanted to point out that that's the other function or another function of an HOV lane.
And so the HOV lanes, when will they be coming? Where will they be going? Linda?
Well, HOV lanes are actually, I don't know that there's a particular roadway yet that's designated specifically for HOV lanes. We have managed
lanes.
None
that have been funded.
None that have been funded yet. But any of the roads that are shown as managed lanes on our long-range plan could potentially be an HOV lane. And I think that that is the desire of the board, at least to this point. But until the project is designed and moves forward through the project development process, there's none that have been specifically defined as a toll or HOV or the other. We've left it open as part of this managed lane concept.
So, if I can make a real quick comment, we talked earlier about Propositions 1 and 7 and the dollars that were coming from the state throughout the state of Texas to the MPOs. One of the allocations of those dollars really started with a dialogue that said, we're going to give you these dollars, but you must commit that you will not put A, any toll roads, or B, that you will not have any, that will all be general purpose lanes. Well, as an MPO, we certainly agreed that we would not use that money for toll projects. We had enough projects that we could put that money on. We have enough congestion to justify that. What we weren't willing to do is to commit to take the dollars and then make them only multi-purpose lanes. We have got to make a concerted effort to embrace the moving of people, not cars. That's multi-purpose, that's HOV lanes, that's all of those potential tools that allow us to move people, not cars. We weren't willing to do that here at the MPO, and fortunately we also got the money. There is a lot of discussion around future legislation that would be much more prescriptive on where and how we could spend that money.
Okay,
I think it's incredibly important that we talk to our legislators and tell them what our preferences are.
So Prop 1 and 7 provided San Antonio $402 million, which were allocated for Loop 410, US 90 to Highway 151, acquiring right-of-way along US 281 from Stone Oak to the Bear Comal lines. So these are areas that you're talking about.
Correct.
But Linda, to your point you made earlier, you're talking about, well, we've got to toll these roads in order to get people to change their behavior? Is that it?
And because I thought tolling roads was to generate revenue. I don't think I said that exactly. I think what I've said is that we're allowing for managed lanes, and that could potentially be a toll. But, you know, as a planner, as a transportation planner, I'd be just as happy with high occupancy vehicle lanes that have a bus priority that allow buses to travel down them. At this point, the word managed lane doesn't specify that it will necessarily be tolled. It could be managed in some other way. And it could be managed, like I said before, as a truck-only lane. So there's a variety of options, and it's hard to say. For example, we have managed lanes on 35. It's hard to say exactly what that will look like until that roadway is designed. And it may be like on 281, where the managed lane concept comes out completely. I think that would be doing ourselves a disservice, because I think we really should, as a region, be looking at least having a few reliable lanes in our community. And I think that that's what the managed lane concept would give us.
Okay, let's get some of these callers on the air. Ian, hi, Ian, welcome to The Source. Thanks for hanging on, and you're on the air.
Sure, hi. I actually wanted to voice my support both for the high occupancy lanes and for a rail. I'm from New England originally, and I work from home right now here in San Antonio, and I would use a public transportation system more if I did feel it was more reliable. And if we look at what happened in Brazil when they added a dedicated lane for the buses, it increased the use and the reliability of the public transportation. And I feel that a rail is a better, more efficient way to do that, but dedicated lanes would work just as well.
All right, Ian, thank you for the call. Let me get another one on. Mike. Hi, Mike. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hey, Mike.
Actually, I hear all this talk. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hello.
Hey,
okay,
buddy.
I hear all this talk about high occupancy lanes and things like that. My job requires me to drive everywhere every day, so that kind of stuff would not do me any good. What I do see is a lot of people that are not paying attention in traffic. They're driving too fast. They're driving too slow. They're distracted. The other side of that coin is the roads. I live near Highway 151 and 1604. I don't know what kind of traffic engineers are working out there, but that's just become a nightmare. People will not obey speed limits on a high occupancy lane any more than they will on a regular expressway. So I really think the traffic law should be enforced more vigorously. And after all, there's going to be revenue from that. So the city should look at that as a good source of revenue.
Okay, Mike, thank you for the call. And Linda, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I would, you know, agree that for most high occupancy vehicle lanes, some level of enforcement is necessary for them to work correctly. So that's typically part of the package, as this idea of it being used for also bus service and express bus service. So I think he's absolutely correct. As far as 151 and 1604, I live out there myself, and it's a horrid mess right now. But unfortunately, construction comes with some pains, and if you just hang in there, I think we're all going to really appreciate the outcome.
Okay. Zachariah is on the line, and let me see here. Zachariah, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks, sir. I just had a quick question about the bus system. How difficult would it be to get the bus system to go into areas like Schertz, Texas? I live there now. I previously lived in San Antonio, and I haven't had a vehicle. When I lived in San Antonio, I used the bus system, and I found it very well done. I was able to get where I needed to go when I needed to get there. But now that I've moved to Schertz, there is absolutely no bus system. The closest one is 5 miles from me.
Okay, Zachariah, anyone? Councilman?
I can make a quick comment to that. And all the agreements that the VIA enters into, interlocal agreements with other cities, are really driven by that governance structure. VIA is not limited just to the city of San Antonio,
no.
But they have to go out and create interlocal agreements and things of that nature. And what I would encourage Zachariah to do is to call his elected officials in his municipality and tell them to get going on that kind of dialogue. VIA wants to serve them. Those are individuals that are coming in and out of San Antonio on a daily basis to live, work, and play. And we want to extend our transit service to them. But there's some governance issues.
But they'd have to pay for it.
Of course.
Yeah.
You know, so just like with Castle Hills, they were talking about maybe not doing VIA anymore, and then they realized it was actually something that people in the city really depended on. And they had to figure that out. And so, Shelley, did you want to talk about a little bit more about where the series is going and how this is working out for you?
Yeah, we still have two more days of targeted stories. We've talked about how bus service might be expanded. That was on Tuesday. Joey Palacios had a great story. I dealt with sort of the rail issue, looking at other communities and what we might learn from them. And tomorrow, Aaron has a really interesting story about tolling and how that factors into decision making. On Friday, we're going to talk about what Councilman Lopez told me was the biggest hot burner issue right now, and that is San Antonio to Austin. What in the heck are we going to do? And we have some information we're going to share on that. So I don't know. Aaron, you were saying, and I know this is in your story, that there is something imminent about to happen on rail.
On rail? No, on tolling.
I'm sorry, yes.
Well, it's hard to say, and maybe Linda can speak more to this.
Some decision
making. There have been toll projects on and off the books for the last decade or so, and what we've seen with a stretch of 281, for example, and a stretch of I-10 after those were challenged legally. Those are now, as I understand it, going to be done as managed lanes projects or HOV projects potentially. Anyway, as non-toll projects. But
correct.
There currently is tolls being considered on for that northern stretch of Loop 1604. But this would be coming in, I think, 2023, according to the current plan. So a lot could change and a lot could happen between now and then. But I wonder, Linda, if you could speak to at all the idea of why cities across Texas, why municipalities across Texas are considering tolls to deal with perhaps a public funding shortfall to meet the demand for, you know, in San Antonio, that we have a million more people coming here in the next 25 years. Why tolls have become part of the picture in order to get things built in time when there's not public funding available.
Sure. I was just up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area not too long ago, and it was amazing to see all the construction underway just everywhere. And they are doing some amazing roadway projects up there. And one of the reasons that they're able to do that is that they do have a toll funding source, and it is producing quite a bit of funds for them to advance the projects that they need in their community, and not just roadway projects, but their rail system, their bus system. That funding can be put to great use. We are in a stage right now where, as our vehicles get more fuel efficient, our funding source is diminishing. And so it's very difficult. The funding issue is very real. But tolling can also serve another mechanism, and one that's being used in Los Angeles. Their congestion is far worse than ours, but they do have dynamic tolling there, where as congestion increases, the price of the toll increases as well. And again, it just keeps at least one lane open to the traffic.
All right, we'll keep an eye on that as these stories develop. We'll be hearing them here on the Texas Public Radio newscast. We continue these in-depth reports. I want to thank Linda Alvarado-Vela from the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, Ray Lopez, City Councilman from District 6, also with the MPO, and Shelley Coffley, Aaron Schrank, our reporters here at TPR. This is The Source.